Their gondola pulled in at a mooring platform on the edge of mid-pool. Edyard and the squad went up the wooden stairs to the broad concourse surrounding the pool. It was eerily deserted. The buildings that formed the far side were 4 or 5 stories high, all of them independent from each other, tall and narrow, as were most of the structures in the district, with irregular bulges on their sides. Windows protruded out of them like insect eyes. More than anywhere in the city, Sampaloc's structures seemed based on some organic formation. Edyard could see entire families lined up behind the bubbles of crystal, staring at them. Trepidation filled the air like a noxious fume. "He's this way," Edyard said, and headed off towards the top of Zulmal Street. His farsight observed the constables gathering at every bridge into Sampaloc, ready to prevent anyone from coming out into the city, especially rioters. There were almost no gondolas moving on the canals around the district. He walked on for almost 10 minutes along the twisty litter-strewn street, always in the shade of the dark, plant-swathed houses. The few people abroad gave him and the squad sullen glances before they hurried off down side alleys. A couple of them spat contemptuously. Edyard kept watching Bice's mansion, a lofty stepped tower surrounded by a thick rectangular wall with only 3 gates. There were a lot of people inside, but none were coming out. The big iron-bound gates were all firmly closed. He wasn't quite sure if any of the 100 were inside. If they were, getting them out would be the task from Honius. Probably not worth it. Edyard directed his long talk to a single figure, skulking down one of the side alleys they passed. "Have you seen anything?"
8 of my people walk Sampaloc today," Argian replied. "They're not using concealment, not yet. That would draw your attention to them."
"Why are they here?"
"I spoke to Pitier. Of all of us, he holds views most similar to my own. He said they have been told to observe, but to hold themselves ready."
"I see. Thank you." Boate was sitting calmly on one of his 2 chairs when the squad arrived outside. Edyard knocked loudly on the door. His farsight examined the man closely as he came to the door, but he carried no pistol or blade.
"Water walker," Boate said in a jaded voice, "have you come to escort me to the financial court?"
"Nothing that pleasant. You are under arrest."
"On what charge?"
"Suspicion of extortion. We intend to hold you while we gather corroborating evidence."
"Are you sure you want to do this?"
"Yes."
"Very well."
He closed his eyes and long talked strongly.
"This is it, my friends. Go forward."
Edyard quietly asked the city to bring the remaining Jamalar barrels up from the tunnel running under Zulmal Street. They slithered up quietly in the gaps between the swollen, knobbly buildings, sitting unnoticed in the shade of the creepers and trees, displacing some of the rubbish cluttering the gutters. The squad moved back out of the house, surrounding Boate. Doors were starting to open all along Zulmal Street. Men emerged, carrying long clubs or knives, hammers, pokers, broken bottles. Edyard ignored them, concentrating on the 5 barrels that had emerged at the side of Boate's house. His third hand detached the tops of each one.
"You won't make it 10 yards, Boate gloated.
On either side of the street, the men began to edge their way forward. They were giving Edyard and the squad nervous glances, but slowly and surely they kept moving. There was a great deal of long talk slithering among them.
Go on," was the most common phrase. "Keep going, there's hundreds of us."
"Stand back," Edyard instructed loudly. A rock came whirling out of the sky, thrown by someone at the rear of the swelling mob. Maxen's third hand swatted it away easily. Boate started to laugh.
"Not quite the people's champion you thought you were, eh, water walker?"
Edyard's third hand sucked the oil out of all 5 barrels, consolidating it into a giant globe. He sent it streaking forwards. As it flew a couple of yards over his head, he held up a hand. A single thread of light crackled out from his extended index finger. The oil ignited with a loud roar, spitting out fat globules of flame. Edyard guided it down to a yard above the street, then sent it racing on ahead of him. The men lining the route yelled in fear and dived aside. Great droplets of flaming oil splattered onto the street, hissing and fizzing in its wake. "This way," Edyard told a startled Boate politely. They began to walk back down Zulmal Street. The would-be mob were keeping their distance now, watching the fireball anxiously as Edyard began to draw it back.
I never got to thank your dear brother for this idea, he said to Boate. It was a good one.
It's a long way to Parliament House, Boate growled, and we're not there yet.
He was using his long talk to issue a fast stream of instructions. Ediard's far side showed him people taking to the streets all across Sampaloc. He was ready for that. The constables had been instructed that under no account was anyone from the district to get across a bridge and spread their brand of disturbance into the rest of the city. From what he could perceive, the bridge reinforcement teams were holding well. None of the rapidly forming crowds were getting close to the end of a bridge. He picked out several of the 100 directing people, goading them onwards. Stones and bottles were starting to be thrown and telekinetically guided onto the constables. Blade discs were also skimming through the air. The arrest teams weren't faring as well as he hoped. The most able, far-sighted constables were assigned to tracking those on the list and guiding the teams towards them. They were having trouble pushing through the hostile crowds thronging the streets.
The thing about fire, Water Walker, is that you can never really control how it burns, Boate said.
Ediard was very conscious of how quickly the fireball's oil was being used up. The street behind them was now jammed with angry people, yelling insults and abuse. More of the mob were starting to mill around in the alleys on the way back to Midpool. As soon as the squad passed, they came out to join the main press behind them.
Ediard, Boyd growled under his breath.
You know that we can dodge anything they throw at us, Ediard said with quiet reassurance to his friends. Our only real concern is to get this bastard into a cell.
Once ignited, a flame will burn until there is no more fuel, Duarte said.
His hand waved at the mob following them.
They don't need ringleaders anymore. They're burning on their hatred for you.
The barrels secreted down the alleys had been discovered. They were tipped over and smashed. Jamalar oil rippled down the street ahead of the squad. Ediard sent the fireball soaring high above the rooftops, then burst it apart in a vivid halo of flame. The mob below flinched. Ediard just caught a flash of white light. The oil on the streets burst into flame. People screamed and ran. A wall of flame raced towards the squad.
Shit, Ediard grunted.
He asked the city to change the street, and the oil vanished, soaked away by the suddenly porous pavement. Puffs of smoke floated between the buildings, dissipating in the breeze.
Boate's jaw dropped.
What?
Ediard winked at him. Keep going. The crowd along Zulmal Street kept a respectful distance as the squad walked the rest of the way to the Midpool concourse. There were over 100 constables on the broad semicircle around the pool, with more behind the bridges over to Bellis and Pholus Park. Livid crowds were boiling round the entrance to each street that led into Sampaloc. Maxon and Boyd handed a sullen Boate over to one of the arrest teams, with instructions to take him to the cells underneath Parliament House.
Now what?
Cansine asked, looking at the jeering crowd blocking the end of Amtal Street.
I don't know,
Ediard said. He was long talking with the senior sergeants at each of the bridges, checking up on the progress of the other arrest teams. We've managed to nab 8 of the 100, including Boate. That's not going to have the effect I wanted. He gave the street mobs a worried glance. I don't want to send anyone in there again. That really will kick things off.
If we stand out here, we've lost, Maxon said. You'll be admitting they're in charge of Sampaloc, and there's nothing you can do about it.
I thought we didn't mind if they rioted in Sampaloc, Boyd said.
There are a lot of decent folk who live here, Ediard said, and this is a very big crowd. It's the same at every bridge. I didn't realize Boate still had this much control.
We could go in with concealment, Dinley said, snatch the closest one on the list and bring him out quickly. That 100 are the key to this. They're the ones stirring people up. Take them out one at a time.
You might be right, Ediard said.
He wasn't sure. The size and animosity of the response had caught him off guard. But then Sampaloc residents always had a chip on their shoulder. It wouldn't take much to rile them. He went over to the watcher crew at the end of the concourse next to the trade route canal to find out which of the 100 was nearby. Before he'd even spoken to anyone, the sergeant at the middle bridge into High Moat was long talking that the crowd was rampaging along the streets, breaking into shops and businesses. Looting had begun. Ediard's far sight flicked over to the area, sensing a deluge of anger and glee.
Not a good combination, he thought, as his far sight found a G-Eagle overhead. The Genistar's acute sight revealed flames and smoke pouring out of 5 or 6 buildings. When it swooped lower, he could see dense congregations pressed up against commercial premises. Goods were being hauled out of shattered doors to be passed around the eager crowd. Scores of kids were running away, each clutching at some piece of loot. The G-Eagle's thought filled with agitation. Something was pulling at it, forcing it down towards the curving angled rooftops of Sampaloc. Its powerful wings flapped madly as its distress mounted. Ediard found that extremely alarming. Few people had the telekinetic strength to reach all the way up to a G-Eagle, and fewer still had the inclination to attack a defenseless creature. It was inordinately difficult to far-sight telekinesis, but Ediard could just make out the tenuous band of force stretching up from the ground. He focused on the origin. A youth, no more than 15, standing in Entfall Avenue while the crowd surged around him. "Stop that!" Ediard commanded. The lad started. His telekinesis abandoned the G-Eagle, and he ran into the nearest building. The sound of wood splintering reverberated across the mid-pool concourse. Ediard looked round to see a group of people had battered down the door to a baker's shop in Miss Lore Avenue. Cheers rang out as the crowd swarmed in to help themselves to fresh loaves and cakes. Sharp cries from the baker and his family vanished swiftly. Then the grocer's next door was breached, a clothing shop, a tavern to the accompaniment of much cheering, an ironmonger's, cafe, a cobbler. "What do we do, Water Walker?" the senior sergeant on the concourse demanded. Ediard looked at him, not knowing the answer. Then came the sound of doors being broken on Zulmal Street.
"Lady."
He turned to the sergeant. "Drive them back. Get them out of those premises." The sergeant, who was from Vaji Station, gave him a dubious stare.
"Yes, sir."
A squad of over 50 constables formed up, with Ediard at the head. He led them into Miss Lore Avenue. As soon as the crowd saw him coming, they turned and ran. A sleet of projectiles hurtled through the air at the advancing constables. Ediard battered all of them away, sending them tumbling to the ground ahead of him. When he looked down the first side alley, he could see directly into Zulmal Street. The riot and looting was worse there. Further up Miss Lore Avenue, the crowd was breaking into a fresh set of shops.
"You did this?"
a woman screamed at him. She'd run out of a splintered doorway, wearing a long yellow dress that was smeared with blood. Her hand clutched at a long knife, which she waved extravagantly.
"You, Water Walker, you ruined us. 200 years my family has lived here. 200 years our shop has thrived. Now we've lost everything. Rotten Honius, you bastard!"
Ediard stopped advancing down Miss Lore Avenue. All he was accomplishing was to push people into the areas that were undamaged, providing them with further targets.
"Lady, help me," he muttered.
3 more sergeants reported riots starting. 6 sections of Sampaloc were in chaos now.
"Trouble here," Dinlay's long talk reported.
Ediard could tell his friend was trying not to panic. "Back to the concourse," he told the constables he was leading. When he got there, he found the rioters in Zulmal Street had been emboldened by his absence. They'd spilled out into the concourse to confront the constables defending the bridge over to Belis. Behind them, the looting was multiplying. Violence spilled onto the street as the beleaguered business owners did their best to defend their livelihoods. He saw clubs swing brutally. Third hands clashed. Then his worst fear was realized. A pistol shot rang out. Everyone on the concourse froze, trying to see where the shot had come from. Out of the corner of his eye, Ediard saw Cancine fall. She was on the front rank of the constables, of course. Now she crumpled to her knees, hands clutching her chest, breathing with difficulty.
"Cancine!"
Maxen bellowed. He shoved his way through the silent constables to reach her side. His arms went round her.
"All right," she gasped. "I'm all right. Lady, I'll never complain about these dross silk waistcoats again."
She was rubbing her chest where the bullet had struck. Maxen let out a sob of relief and kissed her. A furious Ediard strode out into the empty zone between the constables and the rioters. The nearest members of the mob shuffled backwards.
"Break this up," Ediard roared. "Go back to your homes. This is over."
For a moment, the silence held. Then someone unseen yelled,
"Fuck the Water Walker!"
2 more pistol shots rang out. Ediard was ready for them. The bullets hung in the air a couple of feet in front of him. He was going to make a show of examining them and sneering contemptuously. Slap it into the rioters that he was invincible, that their moment of rebellion was over. But it was a signal for a renewed round of jeering. "One of mine fired the shots," Argian long-talked, directed to Ediard. Ediard's gaze flicked up to the roof of the building at the start of Zulmal Street. Argian was there, crouched down amid the profusion of flowering vines.
"Who?
Where?" Ediard asked.
"Junli. He's already retreating."
The hail of missiles was starting again.
"All right," Ediard snarled at the rioters. "I warned you."
Those in the front rank faltered, their taunts and abuse fading as they saw his determination. Ediard's cloak billowed wide, freeing his arms. He brought them up in a wide, curving motion, his eyes closed, concentrating hard. He'd never really exerted his full telekinetic strength before. Not like this. Not aggressively. Behind him, the surface of Midpool shivered. Twin plumes of water exploded high into the air. Their crests warped round to streak over the concourse, merging directly above Ediard. The constables underneath the giant airborne streams gasped, crouching down fearfully. Ediard grinned mercilessly. He flung the water directly at the rioters as a single wave front. It hit the ground in front of Zulmal Street, throwing up a huge cloud of spume. The main bulk of water surged onwards into the street, knocking everybody off their feet. Third hands formed desperate body shields, warding the thundering foam away from mouths and noses. Ediard kept it coming, standing immobile as the vast torrent churned above him. Captured fill rats squawked in terror as they were propelled overhead within the unnatural flood. The leading wave rushed 50 yards down the street, 70, 100, its force and size reduced gradually as smaller streams poured away down the side alleys. The surface of Midpool sank down drastically as Ediard continued to siphon water out. Water along the connecting canals began to dip and race in to fill the depression. Ediard took a deep, calming breath and slowly lowered his arms. Above him, the final swell of water splattered down into the street. There was no more rioting. Water churned away down alleys and drains. Ediard looked at the hundreds of soaking bodies left clinging to the buildings and each other, flopping about like beached fish. A multitude of coughing and harsh gasps echoed along the walls of dripping vines. Sunlight shining through the placid stripes of alto cumulus created a strangely beautiful sheen across the glistening surfaces.
"I told you," Ediard announced impassively. "Go home."
Constables moved down Zulmal Street, helping people to their feet, making sure they were all right. Broken limbs were a common injury. Over 2 dozen were carried to the concourse where doctors had been summoned. 2 arrests were made when they found a couple of the people on Ediard's 100 list. Other than that, there were no recriminations. The rioters slunk away, shivering in their sodden clothes. Miss Lord Avenue was equally quiet. "What in the lady's name is going on?" Chief Constable Walsfold demanded with a directed long talk. Soft and precise though the telepathy was, Ediard could sense the man's anger and fear. "I had to do something, sir. The rioters were destroying the whole street." "You might have calmed your area, but the rest of Sampaloc is falling into Lady Damned Enneker."
"I know," Ediard replied miserably.
His farsight could see the mob rampaging through the streets and alleys across the rest of Sampaloc. Smoke was churning into the morning air, muting the bright sunlight across the district. Instead of giving them pause for thought, his actions had actually acted like some kind of spur to the mobs. "I'll go over to Galsard Street next. It's closest. Then I'll move on to—"
"You will do no such thing," Walsfold said. "We're worried your actions are just inflaming the whole situation. You stand down, Walter Walker. I want you back in Jeevan's by midday. I am ordering all constables to fall back behind the bridges."
"But people are being hurt," Ediard protested.
"Perhaps you should have thought of that before you began this action. You assured me that the disturbance would be minimal. I don't know who it was that forced the gang leaders into Sampaloc, but all that's done is magnified this whole Lady Damn disaster."
"It would have been worse. Every district would be burning like this by now, probably.
Dear lady, what have I done?"
"Yes, sir. The mayor feels more direct action will be required to support the citizens currently under threat."
"What sort of action?"
"We're not sure,
The Upper Council has been in emergency session for the last 20 minutes. Nothing has been decided.
Ediard gazed round the concourse. A wide flow of shallow water was rippling back out of Zulmal Street to gurgle over the rim into Midpool. A couple of doctors had responded to the calls of the sergeants and were moving along the row of injured. Ladies novices in their blue and white robes were scurrying round, assisting the doctors and comforting the dazed patients. A shot rang out. Every constable flinched, automatically looking towards Zulmal Street. Ediard's farsight was unconsciously aware of his squadmates, just as Che had taught them so long ago. Boyd's thoughts vanished from perception. Somewhere close by, Cancine screamed. Ediard's farsight flashed out to where Boyd had been an instant before, one of the shops along Zulmal Street. A mind in the front room glowed with unrepentant satisfaction. There was a lifeless body in there, but Farsight couldn't help Ediard identify who it was. He could, however, pick out the kind of kit every constable wore.
"Lady, no," he whispered.
Then he was running across the concourse and into Zulmal Street. It was a baker's shop, of course. The deluge of water had poured in through the broken door, creating havoc inside. Shelving and counters had flipped over as the powerful current raced through into the rear. It struck the ovens in the kitchens, releasing dangerous clouds of steam as it quenched their fires. One of the heavy cabinets in the front had toppled onto a teenage lad, pinning him to the ground. That was how Boyd found him, whimpering in agony, coughing water, blood seeping into his clothes from where broken hip bones had punctured his skin. A son of the baker or a rioter, Boyd didn't care. The lad was suffering and needed help. Boyd helped. Using his third hand and a post of wood, he was crouched down beside the cabinet, levering it free. When Ediard rushed in, Mireille was still standing over Boyd's corpse, the pistol in her hand. Her clothes were spattered with blood, as well they might be. She'd put the pistol muzzle an inch from the back of Boyd's head to shoot. The front of Boyd's face had blown off, spewing gore across the cabinet and the poor lad underneath it, who was now weeping hysterically. Mireille giggled at the constables piling into the shop.
"I got you," she said in a peculiar sing-song voice. "I got you. You killed my life. We're equal now."
Dinlay lunged forward, face contorted in fury, his third hand reaching to heart-squeeze the demented woman. Ediard's shield protected her.
"No, she will stand trial."
His third hand plucked the pistol from her.
"Take her out," he told Ural.
He lifted the cabinet effortlessly from the lad. "And get a doctor in here." Ural and two constables took Mireille out of the shop. As they left, Argian slipped in. Maxon dropped to his knees next to Boyd's corpse. He reached out tentatively, as if his friend were merely pretending. Blood mingled with the water soaking into his uniform trousers. Cancine was gripping a sobbing Dinlay, tears leaking silently from her eyes.
"Why?"
she whispered.
Argian held up the pistol. "This model is the kind we favor. They would know her state of mind. It would be a simple thing to give her this and whisper where one of the Water Walker's squad was."
Maxon turned to snarl at Argian.
"Wait,"
Ediard said. He found it strange he was so calm. Shock seemed to be slowing his thoughts, taking him a long way away. It was as though the events inside the baker's shop were taking place on some remote stage.
"What?" Maxon moaned. "He's dead!"
Ediard stood perfectly still, reaching out with his farsight. His friends faded away, as did the walls of the bakery. Droplets from the drenched walls and furniture struck the puddled floor, tinkling like bells. Slowing, grayness eclipsed the world he walked through. Amidst this somber, silent universe, a single figure glimmered. Ediard smiled.
"You stayed.
I haven't said goodbye,"
Boyd's soul told him.
"I'd like to say goodbye, but it's difficult, Ediard. They can't hear me."
"Take whatever you need," Ediard told him, and held his arms out. The phantom Boyd touched him. It was as though a spike of ice was being driven through his heart. Ediard's mouth opened to a shocked O. His own life was flowing out through the contact. The real universe rushed back in to engulf him. Cancine gasped as Boyd's spectral shape materialized above his own corpse. Ediard staggered, forcing himself to draw down a breath,
The cold was spreading through him, numbing.
Boyd? Dinlay said.
My friends. Boyd gazed round them magnanimously.
Don't go,
Cansine said.
I have to. I can hear the nebula's calling. It's quite beautiful. I only waited for Ediard to notice me.
We need you too.
Dinlay, tell Soraya for me. Be kind. She will need a lot of comfort.
I promise.
Cansine, Maxine, don't hide. Not like this. Life is too precious for a single moment of happiness to be lost.
Cansine gave Maxine a forlorn look.
Yes. Yes, you're right.
Boyd regarded Argian.
You, the doubter, have faith in Ediard. He is stronger than all of us. I can see that. I can see the way he affects this universe. It flows to his will.
Ediard grimaced, his knees sagging. The cold was becoming unbearable.
I'm sorry, Ediard, Boyd said. I weary you. I am one pattern you cannot sustain.
Pattern? Ediard gasped.
Why, yes. That is what this universe is. A beautiful memory. There are so many patterns folded within its structure. They stretch back forever.
He let go of Ediard's hand and immediately began to diminish. As he did so, he gave a knowing grin.
I never realized the city was alive like this, Water Walker. But you know, don't you? You can feel its dreams. Get it to help you. Today of all days. Stop being so timid. This needs more than water to finish it. Have courage and be bold.
Ediard couldn't stop shivering.
I will, he pledged. You must think I'm so weak to leave,
Boyd said, as his spectre lifted towards the sky, thinning out. Ediard's perception followed it.
No,
he said. Then he heard,
we have to stay. He is all we have.
What? He asked. The sensation of a smile emerged from Boyd's essence.
I understand.
And he was gone, ascending to the nebulas. Cansine was crying openly as they stepped back out onto Zulmal Street.
I'm sorry,
she blubbed, wiping the back of her hand over her eyes.
I'll be all right.
You do see souls, Argian said in astonishment.
Yes,
Ediard said. He was incredibly tired. It would be so easy to sit down and just close his eyes, chasing a moment's rest. After all, Walsfall had ordered him back to Jeevan's. None of this was his problem anymore.
Yeah, right.
What do you want to do? Maxine asked. Ediard gave him a desperate look.
I don't know.
My people,
Bice's long talk voice called. As one, the squad turned to face the district master's mansion at the heart of Sampaloc. Bice stood on the roof, dressed in his flowing violet robes, the fur-lined hood thrown over his left shoulder. He held his arms out in benediction to his vast audience.
I speak to all of us within Sampaloc, those whose families have been here for generations and those newly arrived, seeking safe haven from the Water Walker's persecution.
Ediard immediately bridled.
Don't say anything, Cansine ordered sternly. Arguing in public will make you seem petty.
Do not fight among yourselves, Bice said softly. Your enemy is outside, and this conflict only strengthens him. Even now the forces who fear your freedoms are gathering in High Moat. I urge you to stand firm against them. Resist their occupation of your home, the last place in the city where you are independent men, as Ra promised. I offer your family sanctuary within the walls of my mansion. Here they will be safe while you fight to establish your liberty against the oppression brought upon all of us by the Water Walker. We have little time now. Listen to those who walk among you, speaking with my authority. Resist the invasion of those who seek to banish you from this city, which is your birthright.
Bice gifted a humble smile and stepped down into the tower.
What in Honius was that? Dinlay asked. Some kind of election stunt?
I have no idea, an equally confused Ediard grunted. He gave Argian a questioning glance. Could he really be the top ganglord?
No, Argian said. It isn't like that.
The Dirawals have strong links with the gangs. They profit from having business rivals weakened, but Bice is smart enough to keep his distance. This is something else entirely.
Oh, lady,
Cancine groaned. She was facing north, her eyes closed as her far sight ranged out.
The militia's coming.
What? Ediard gasped.
The militia, a whole regiment by the look of it. They're coming across High Moat.
It took a second for Ediard's own farsight to find the long rank of men marching past the caravan pens.
What are they doing? The constables are holding the rioters in Sampaloc. They can't get over the bridges.
There is a complete breakdown of law and order inside Macathran, Maxon said tonelessly. If you're the mayor, how would you feel about that? The militia aren't going to reinforce the bridges. They're coming to stop the riots.
How?
Ediard asked. This isn't a militia job. The constables are much better trained to break up mobs.
They're armed, Cancine said quietly.
The chill akin to that Ediard had experienced at Boyd's Touch returned. Of all the constables he'd organized to help today, only the sergeants and corporals were authorized to carry revolvers.
But the people on the streets...
And Bice has just told them to resist the invaders, Dinlay said.
They have to be stopped, Ediard said. The militia can't shoot at civilians, even if they are breaking the law.
People in the mob are armed, Argian said. It may be that the militia will be shot at first. That would be... convenient.
Will your people listen to you? Can you get them to stop this?
There is little to be done on the streets, Argian said. Though I will try and speak to those of my fellowship walking Sampaloc today. But it is Motluck and his kind who ultimately hold sway.
Talk to him, Ediard said. This cannot be allowed to happen.
I will do what I can.
Argian turned and headed off along the street.
With me, Ediard told the others. We have to get to High Moat and stop this.
He started running back to the concourse, his far sight ranging out.
Lady, curse it, where are all the gondolas? Why are they never about when you need one?
You planning to give the militia a good soaking? Dinlay asked keenly.
Whatever it takes.
The nearest gondola Ediard could sense was in Lilac Canal, heading away from Great Major Canal. It would take far too long. He stood in the middle of the pool concourse, twisting about, racked by indecision. His support of Boyd had left him aching and enervated. He knew he didn't have the strength to pull many more stunts like the water cascade. Especially not if he had to first run the entire length of Sampaloc to reach the High Moat Bridge.
Lady, damn it!
He sent his farsight straight into the Orchard Palace, finding the mayor in the upper council chamber.
Sir, please, I have to talk to you.
Water Walker! The mayor's timbre was frigid. The only reason you're still in this city is so you can give evidence before the commission I'm setting up to examine today's events and determine who is to blame. After that, I have no doubt the Grand Council will pass a very specific act of banishment, with you as the sole name listed.
Sir, please, you have to call back the militia.
What lady damn choice have you left me? Macathran has not seen the like of this disorder for over 1,000 years, and it was all your idea. Arresting these 100 troublemakers was supposed to put an end to chaos. All you have done is provoked outrage and horror. People, decent people, in Sampaloc, and there are many, contrary to your propaganda, are suffering untold brutality at the hands of a wild mob, a mob you provoked. I am the mayor, and I will not let that stand. It must be stopped.
Let me stop it, sir. I can use water on them again, however many times it takes, 12 if I have to. Please, you cannot let the militia shoot people.
Since you are so obviously very hard of understanding, I will say this in simple terms. You are to leave Sampaloc at once. The officers of the militia are not savages. They will deal with this in a fast and professional manner. Do you understand? If you do not comply this instant, I will have Walsfall issue an order for your arrest. Not even you can withstand 100 constables at once.
Yes, sir, Ediard said.
His throat was strangely hard, making it difficult to swallow.
So what are we doing? Dinlay asked.
Ediard stared round. The squad was still waiting for his word. And look where my ideas have got us. But I know what I am doing is right. I know it is. The politicians and families are twisting everything. He smiled grimly at his friends.
We're doing exactly what Boyd told me.
Being bold. Are you with me?
Maxon put on a pained expression.
Why are you asking that?
Several constables were heading towards them, led by a very uncomfortable-looking sergeant. Ediard waved insolently at them.
I think we just stopped being constables.
Oh, Honius, Cansine groaned.
You'll really need to hold my hand for this, Ediard said, suddenly relishing what he was about to do.
His friends sensed his new mood and grinned, so they held hands, the four of them standing together in the middle of the concourse. In broad daylight, with 100 constables looking on and thousands of far-sight gazes playing over them, they sank down through the solid surface, laughing defiantly all the way. It was Maxon who screamed the loudest while they tore through the bright tunnel, as if they were falling to Quarentia from the very nebulas themselves.
Ediard, what are you doing? Finnerton's long talk asked when they surfaced in a deserted alley not far from the central bridge over Cloud Canal.
I have to stop the militia, sir, Ediard replied, impressed by how fast the Grand Master had found them. Then he saw a G-dog at the other end of the alley.
Listen to me, Ediard. Do not use force against the militia. You do not have universal approval among their officers, and Owen has given them a free hand to deal with the rioters.
Why? Ediard asked. Why is he doing this?
As the city sees it, he is clearing up the mess you have created, Finnerton said with infinite weariness. In doing so, he usurps you as the force of law and order within Macathran, and breaks the gangs at the same time. When people are killed in any number, this city will blame you, and because of that, they'll vote for him at every election for the next 100 years.
All this is about votes?
No, Ediard. As I told you right at the beginning, it is about politics. Always. Those in power are not easily dislodged. Certainly not by good intentions.
But what about Bice? He's offering people sanctuary in his mansion while the rioters defy the militia. He's making things worse.
Bice is a sacrifice Owen is prepared to make. They were allies in council until this morning. Each wanted to claim credit for defeating you. Bice underestimated Owen's resolve. It is a split which Owen has played perfectly. He is already talking of the council putting Bice on trial for complicity, and there are enough of Bice's relatives who will leap at the chance of taking his district mastership should he be disbarred. All Bice can do is make his gesture of resistance in the hope it makes things worse for Owen.
Do you think it will?
I have no idea. They may yet reach an accord before the point of no return is breached. Whether they do or not, nobody is going to vote for me. Not after today. Probably not even me. I'm seriously considering offering Owen my allegiance. That way I might salvage some of my political influence. Possibly if I work with him, I can be a moderating voice.
No, you can't do that.
We all have to face reality, Ediard. He is consolidating the city behind him, just as we hoped to do.
By causing people to die, there are family agents positioned among the crowd ready to escalate this conflict with the militia.
Then we will need the lady to grant us a miracle, for I see no other way out of this. We are pressured on every side, and you, my brave friend, you will have lost all you have achieved.
This can't happen.
It already has. I will protect you as best I can, but I doubt that will be of much use tomorrow.
Ediard bowed his head as he ended his long talk with the Grand Master.
What's the matter?
Dinlay asked.
We're completely on our own, Ediard told him. Owen has won. He's just swept the rest of us aside as if we didn't exist.
But we do exist, Maxon said urgently. I am here with you to help stop the militia killing people. Let us go and do that.
Ediard's farsight observed the first rank of the militia marching over the bridge from Highmoat.
All right, he said with no real conviction. One last try.
They were spotted as soon as they started walking towards the bridge. Thousands of farsight glances settled on them. More and more people became attuned to their position as the word spread across every district. The weight of attention was like the muggy air of a summer's day pressing down on the four friends as they walked onward. Nothing else was happening in the city. Everyone was watching the events in Sampaloc. A vast barrage of long-talked jeers and remarks fell on them. Ediard blocked them all out, trying to think what to do.
A miracle from the lady. That's what Finnerton said we needed. And he's right.
But the lady only ever performed one real miracle here in the city, her church. I wonder. That would be bold beyond even Boyd's imaginings. The central bridge across Cloud Canal from High Moat was a low curve of the city's substance, lined by stubby emerald pillars with tangerine grooves spiraling up the outside. It led over into a small plaza where tall espaliered fruit trees grew up the sides of every building, covering the bowed walls with thick lines of blossom. The mild scents of peach and plum were now overwhelmed by the acrid smoke that chuffed out of the barricades. Both Burfall Street and Jankal Lane, which led back into the heart of Sampaloc, had been blocked by piles of furniture that the crowds had set alight. Behind them, the shops and businesses had all been looted. Ediard and the squad saw several, named on the 100 list, moving among the confident crowd, congratulating friends, muttering instructions. He picked out a lot of pistols being carried openly. Inside the buildings, it was a sorry story. Injured shopkeepers and traders nursed their wounds, while their families watched the triumphalist carnival outside with mournful thoughts and a great deal of suppressed rage. Ediard reached out to Christabel. "Can you sense all this?" he asked.
"Yes, my love. Everyone in the city is watching Sampaloc now. No one can believe the militia has been brought in. Father fears the worst, but there are so few voices in council that will dare oppose the mayor. Oh, Ediard, what a mess, and it's my fault."
"No."
"Yes," she insisted. "It was my idea to drive them all into Sampaloc, and look how many decent people have suffered already."
"It was a good idea. Imagine this replicated in every district. That's what would have happened."
"Would it? I don't know anymore."
"The responsibility is mine alone. Christabel, I'll probably have to leave the city soon. That's if I don't end up in the Trampello mines."
"I'll be with you, you know that. Wherever you go."
"No, darling. You're to be mistress of Hackspin."
"I don't think I want to be. Not if it is to be a Hackspin under Owen's One Nation rule. Let's not make any decisions until tomorrow. Certainly not in heat."
"Whatever you say.
Is there nothing I can do to help you? Please. I want to be there with you."
"No. But there are a lot of people hurt already. They need doctors."
"I'll organize that. I'll talk to the Medical Guild's Grandmaster. At least he's no Owen ally."
"All right, then."
The alley came out on the Cloud Canal path just short of the bridge. Constables were standing on either side, watching helplessly as the militia regiment marched over. Soldiers were still arriving from High Moat, forming neat ranks on the plaza. Except for one platoon which had lined up 4 deep across the path, 28 revolvers were aimed on Ediard as he approached.
"I would talk to your lieutenant," he said.
The front rank parted to let their lieutenant through. He was tall, in his late 30s, with blonde hair curling out from under his black cap. Every brass button gleamed brightly on his green and sapphire tunic. A long saber was strapped to his white belt. Ediard kept his mind tightly shielded as his spirit sank further. The lieutenant was like every clothead officer in the militia, a young aristocrat who qualified for a commission because of his infinite arrogance. Just for once he'd wished for one with a spark of intelligence and independence.
"Water Walker," the lieutenant inclined his head. "I'm Lieutenant Eustace. I'm in charge here, and I have comprehensive orders from my colonel not to let you pass."
The name was somehow familiar to Ediard, but he was sure he'd never seen the man before.
"If your orders are to stop the rioters, then I can do just that. I already have over at Midpool."
"Which agitated the crowds elsewhere," Lieutenant Eustace said. "You're a menace, Water Walker. The sooner you're out of this city, the better."
"People are going to get badly hurt," Ediard said. "Surely you can see that. I cannot allow this situation to rise to a point where the militia fires upon the crowd. The constables are enough to handle this."
"Your sudden concern for the criminal element is touching. Who has spent the past year provoking them, eh?"
"Please, let me try. I'm asking you man to man. What have you got to lose? If I do quiet them down, your colonel will be full of praise for you taking the initiative. If I fail, then you just carry on."
"Man to man, eh?"
Ediard nodded. There was something wrong here. The lieutenant's face was completely expressionless.
"We have a saying here in Macathran," Eustace said. "Something a boy from the countryside probably isn't aware of. Don't piss in the canals. You never know when you'll need to drink from them."
He waved his left hand in dismissal. It was a languid movement. Ediard saw the silver ring on his third finger and couldn't help the groan of dismay that escaped his lips. It was shaped as a vine with a single ruby in the crest. Jessile's fiancée.
Quite, Lieutenant Eustace said thinly as he turned away. Take one more step towards the bridge, Water Walker, and we'll find out just how many bullets you can shield yourself and your squad against. Now fuck off back to whatever diseased cowpat you came from.
Forget him, Dinlay sneered as the platoon closed ranks again. Just go round them. Use concealment. He's not a problem. We can get to the plaza easily.